Welcome to our 16th and final episode of Nuggets for Vet Nurses, where we bring you bite-sized bits of clinically relevant knowledge for your everyday nursing life. I'm Marcus Taylor.
And I'm Esther Fan, both Kiwis and now from both sides of the equator. We are your show hosts. Is it really our final episode, Marcus? I don't know about you, and I kind of hate to admit it, but it kind of makes me a bit emotional.
What sort of emotional? Like angry because you won't have hours and hours of editing to do anymore, or anxious because you won't know what you're going to do without all these fortnightly deadlines, or ecstatic because you don't need to chase me around the world to record me anymore?
What do you mean? Tracking you down for recording sessions is so much fun.
I thought so.
Mm-hmm. But seriously, I guess I'm just a bit sad, really. I really love producing this podcast and I'm really grateful for the opportunity and the uptake. But I'm also looking forward to the extra time I will have to throw onto other new projects, of course. How about you, Marcus?
Well, to sum it all up, I'm just really freaking hot, actually.
Oh, are you now?
Well, yeah, come on, Esther. I'm in the Middle East. It's so hot. It was like 42 degrees last night, and our AC broke in our bedroom. And then so we moved our mattress into the lounge, and the AC worked in the lounge for a while, and then that one broke too. So it was an absolute crisis. I was like calling people like, we're going to die if someone just comes fix it.
Leaving your last messages like, I love you, Mum.
Yeah, writing on the walls with like pens and stuff.
With your sweat.
This is it. That's right.
Oh, man. All right. Typical male, reluctant to talk about your feelings, just your temperature.
Absolutely. No, I know. I'll tell you, genuinely, we'll be sad to let go. And like, maybe, who knows what the future holds? Maybe, I don't know, Esther, we haven't even talked about this, but
No. Maybe
if there's enough demand, people could wrangle us back
That's
in
right.
future years for
If there's a petition that exceeds the one about the chinchillas, maybe we may take some notice.
It'll be like the second least engaged petition after the chinchilla one in the world.
That's right. Going to make your mark somehow.
Yeah.
That's right. We don't know what the future holds, so we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah.
And not die of hypothermia in the meantime.
Absolutely not.
So last episode we talked about pain, how animals show or don't show pain, how pain and suffering aren't always the same thing, and the indicators of quality of life.
It would be a bit morbid to end our whole podcast series with discussions on euthanasia.
Yeah, that doesn't really fit with our theme music, does it?
No. So we planned part two on the topic of pain. Today we'll cover the common pain medications and what you need to know about them.
First up, let's talk about a class of drugs called NSAID. N-S-A-I-D. What do these letters stand for again, Marcus?
Non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, i.e. they are anti-inflammatories, not steroids.
Steroids like prednisolone or PRED being the other main class of anti-inflammatories.
Remember, steroids and NSAIDs, or sometimes they're also called non-steroidals, should never be given together because it can cause major effects to the gut and other organs.
That's right. So when you're doing hospital admits, for example, be sure to ask the owners what medication their pet is on and when their last dose was.
The most commonly used NSAIDs in small animal practice are meloxicam and carprofen. Trade names for meloxicam include Metacam and Loxicom. Trade names for carprofen include Rimadyl and Carprive.
If you don't know what a trade name is, go back and listen to episode 11. And if you don't know what the difference between carprofen and cartrofen is, go back and listen to episode 11.
Yeah, that was a good episode.
Mm-hmm.
As well as tackling inflammation, these drugs are also painkillers. This might be something to point out to the owner. Sometimes the owner will say, if these are anti-inflammatories, won't she still be in pain after the surgery?
Yeah, and I'll often explain, they're like the equivalent of ibuprofen or Voltaren for humans, with emphasis on the humans part of that sentence. Ibuprofen or Voltaren tablets should never be given to a dog or cat, as they can easily cause toxicity.
Meloxicam and carprofen can also cause toxicity too, if not used appropriately or in a sensitive patient. Signs range from mild vomiting or diarrhea to black feces and acute renal failure.
Black feces is called melena. It happens when there are stomach ulcers which bleed, and this digested blood stains the feces black. The stools can be solid or loose.
So always double check your doses, and again, when the last dose was given. Once daily, doesn't mean at any random time during the day. You can give this drug once. It means at 24-hour intervals.
Here's a fun fact. Contrary to popular opinion, oral NSAIDs for cats and dogs don't need to be given with food. In fact, many of the package inserts explicitly say can be given with or without food. Hashtag read the back of the pack or the package insert.
What? But why do our printed drug labels always say give with food in angry capital letters?
Good question. It's actually something I asked a lecturer from the Royal Veterinary College in London once. Some think giving it with food may reduce the occurrence of vomiting and diarrhea, and then it just becomes a habit to write that down. But if you think about it, when we inject NSAIDs post-op, we don't feed them a meal at the same time, do we?
I guess not. Does it have anything to do with the oral route, like being straight in the gut and there not being any food to mix it with?
Yeah, potentially, but it doesn't look like there's enough robust evidence to put that on the label.
Gotcha.
Another reason may be that we want animals to be well hydrated when taking NSAIDs. So an animal that is eating normally is more likely to be hydrated and the risk of renal toxicity is low. So we default to say give with food.
But we don't always need to.
Exactly. In fact, an animal may sometimes be in so much pain that they go off their food. Then the owner doesn't give them Loxacam because they're not eating, and so the pain persists and they don't eat, and it becomes like a vicious cycle. So when this happens, I often say, go ahead and give them Loxacam to break the chain. Once the pain goes, appetite comes back, and then they get on the mend.
All right. Enough on the non-steroidals. What other class of pain meds are we talking about today?
The next big class we deal with on a daily basis are the opioids. These include methadone, morphine, buprenorphine, butorphanol, fentanyl, and more.
They come under a whole host of trade names, which we won't list here. But go back to your pharmacy safe one day and see if you can pick out a few trade names for each. It pays to know which names refer to which generic, as brands frequently change depending on supply.
Yes, names can be confusing. Now, opioids don't tackle inflammation per se. They only tackle pain, but they do it pretty well, though they can all cause sedation to various degrees, and sometimes a bit of constipation.
Methadone provides great pain relief for up to 4 to 6 hours and is often used as a pre-medication for surgery.
Buprenorphine also provides good pain relief, but not as strong as methadone. It does, however, last longer, up to 6 to 9 hours, so it is good for our post-op management. Sometimes syringes of the injectable form will be dispensed for owners to give sublingually at home.
Sublingually. Is it like duolingual, but you can speak less than one language because it's sublingual? So you're like mute?
Or you just speak one language really poorly?
Yeah. But no, seriously, what is sublingually? Come on.
Sublingually. Well, sub is under, like submarine or suboptimal, suboptimal language skills. And lingual refers to the tongue or language, right? So sublingual means under the tongue and not just in the mouth.
Got it. Butorphanol is an opioid that doesn't give great pain relief, but it's known for its profound safe sedative effects. So it's often the drug of choice in sedation protocols, especially in patients with respiratory distress, because it can calm them down without depressing the cardiovascular system too much. So they breathe easier. Fun fact, it's also an antitussive.
A what?
Antitussive. A cough suppressant.
Oh, hey, like codeine?
That's right. Codeine is also an opioid used for its pain relief and antitussive effects. For this reason, you might find it being dished out to kennel cough patients.
Oh, and hey, for info on kennel cough and its vaccinations, check out episode 10.
Also a good episode. Finally, fentanyl provides good pain relief, but the injectable form is very short-acting, so it's more commonly given as a CRI, that's a constant rate infusion.
That's when you spike the IV bag with something, right? And then you label the heck out of it so it's not mistaken for normal saline or Hartmann's?
Correct. Fentanyl also comes in a transdermal patch. Trans means across, like trans-Tasman, transatlantic, and the dermis is the skin. So these patches contain fentanyl, which is absorbed across the skin for up to 72 hours. They do take 12 to 24 hours to kick in, though, so the patient should have other pain meds on board until then.
And remember, the animal isn't allowed to lick or chew the patch, so make sure they go home with an e-collar and are separated from other pets.
Also, patches can't be cut because it will affect the absorption.
And note, when applying the patch, be sure to shave carefully to avoid clipper rash. Clean the area with water only, not alcohol or soaps, as this can strip the skin's oils and affect absorption rates. Heat can also affect the absorption rate, so be careful not to place heating devices directly onto the patch or lay the animal patch down onto a heat mat.
So many things to remember.
Well, since this is our last episode, when you miss our voices, you can go back and replay all our episodes over and over and over again until all this information is ingrained.
Genius. So, any other pain meds to mention?
Yes, there's gabapentin, which usually comes in tablets or capsules. This is a good alternative to NSAIDs because it's safe to use with GI or renal patients, although, like the opioids, it can cause varying degrees of sedation and it doesn't tackle inflammation.
Sometimes we give it purely for sedation with a free side effect of pain relief thrown in. I've used it sometimes for like really anxious dogs that want to bite your head off for the owners to give a couple of hours before they come to the clinic.
Mm-hmm. And ketamine is also excellent pain relief, only in injectable form. We use it for induction of general anesthetic, but also in CRIs and often in combination with an opioid like fentanyl and lignocaine.
Lignocaine, aka lidocaine, is a local anesthetic commonly used in nerve blocks for dentals, orthopedics, and other procedures. Less post-op pain relief may be needed if we preempt the pain with nerve blocks. We won't go into all the complex details here, but this is known as prevention of wind-up.
So much to talk about and not enough time. But remember, this ain't secret knowledge, and we're not the only ones that can teach. So if any of this has sparked your interest or you have any further questions, go and ask one of your vets to explain and tell them to listen to Nuggets as a primer.
Yep. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram and share this podcast far and wide if you've found it useful or at least entertaining.
Speaking of entertaining, it appears our most popular stories have been the epic fails that we shared earlier on in the series. As a parting gift to our listeners, are you up for sharing more embarrassing stories from clinical practice?
Yeah. Okay, well, how about you go first, Esther? What have you got to fess up for us?
This is a kind of a funny story. It's also just a bad story, but okay, I was a new grad in mixed practice in New Zealand, and I'd been called out for a home euthanasia of an old dog. We did all our home calls or farm calls without a nurse. And so I got to the farm and the large dog was still pretty perky. He was wandering around the backyard of the farm property, even though he was definitely at the end of his days.
You mean the two indicators of quality of life we talked about last time weren't there?
Exactly. So I gave him some sedative to calm him down. And whilst we waited for it to kick in, the owner asked if I could take a look at her golden retriever, which was inside the house. So we went in and I checked it over and then we went back out again. And the dog I'd sedated in prep for youth was gone.
Oh, no.
I can't remember if in our stupidity, or rather my stupidity and maybe out of the owner's grief, we forgot to tie him up after sedating him, or if we put him in the kennel but we forgot to latch it properly and he broke out or something. But anyway, he was nowhere to be seen. And I was horrified. It wasn't exactly like a small, you know, fenced off backyard with fake grass like in the city. It was, you know, those farm properties with backyards that kind of turn into like the rest of the farm?
Yeah, yeah.
So we're walking around the place calling his name, knowing full well he'd likely not reply because he couldn't hear us because he was sedated. And I don't know how long it took, but we finally found him lying in long grass under a tree with really thick, low-hanging branches so we couldn't see him. So I remember me and the owner having to basically like crawl on hands and knees like under this tree to drag him out. I mean, the owner wasn't young and he wasn't a small dog. We got him out so she could hold up the vein for me and I could give the pen to Bob.
Oh my gosh. He smelt the Grim Reaper, Esther.
Don't blame him.
So the moral of the story is always restrain your patient after sedation, especially if the backyard is 1,000 hectares in size.
Correct.
And you also remember our calves falling asleep everywhere. Yeah, we have a bit in common, Esther, with sedating things in them.
And then losing them.
Absolutely. Okay, well, I have another story about my epic fails. When I was a new grad, for some reason, I thought I like knew stuff when I really didn't. Like, I made the mistake of thinking that vet school had prepared me for practice. And I worked in, it was a mostly large animal practice, but like the new grads is kind of like shipped off to like take care of the small animal clinic because no one was really interested in it. And I thought like, you know, I could take care of things. I've been to uni. But it turns out probably I should have been consulting a bit more with other vets, etc. And so this guy brought a cat in. It was a bit sick off its food and just seemed like really depressed. And so I thought, you know, I'll do an x-ray, run some bloods, you know, see what's going on. Maybe it's got a tumor or something. So I took an x-ray and it was a big tomcat. And in the middle of the abdomen was this huge oval radio opaque circle, which I was like, oh, well, that's the kidney, but it's huge. So it must be a tumor kidney. Like this cat's probably got cancer. And so I walked out like a bit sad and, you know, I was like, darn, I have to tell this owner his cat's probably got cancer. And this like, sweet old guy, I tell him, like, I think it might be cancer. Like, the kidney looks quite large, and I'll make a few, you know, calls and see what I can do to confirm it. But I'm pretty sure. And I went and showed him the kidney. I was like, it's so big. And then the poor guy was like tearing up and stuff. Oh, man. And then I like sent the x-ray to Massey University and also to like another vet down the road, and all of them were like, that's a normal kidney. And I was like, oh no. And I sent the cat to like this vet clinic down the road to get like, I was like, oh, this is out of my depth, this whole cancer thing. So I
sent to identify a kidney.
So I sent it down the road to this like proper small animal vet that knew what he was doing. And he called up and he was like, hey, Marcus, this cat you've sent me with the kidney cancer. I was like, yeah. He's like, the kidney's normal. And I looked in its mouth and it's got a rotten tooth. So I think actually it just needs a dental. And I was like, are you serious? He's like, yeah, the cat's fine. It just needs a dental. It needs its tooth taken out.
And, not chemo.
Yeah. And the owner came back and he was sort of like, my cat doesn't have cat.
Oh, he came
back?
Yeah,
he came back to like, I don't know, pay a bill or something. And I'm surprised he paid it. And he was like, my cat doesn't have cancer. The other vet said it's just got a sore tooth. And I was like, yeah, you know, just one of those things, you know, one of the missed life's mysteries. So the moral of the story is you suck when you first graduate. So don't try to do too much stuff on your own. Just like, if in doubt, consult somebody. Don't tell the owners anything until you've talked to some other vets, especially anything to do with cancer.
I think so, you should just have listened in your radiology rounds. Don't I remember you saying something like you dressed up really nicely for your radiology rounds?
Yeah, I was too focused on my outfit.
All the gear, no idea.
Absolutely. And
always look in the mouth. Always look in the mouth.
Absolutely.
Well, I've got another story, and it's kind of, I was pretty dumb. Not clinically, but okay. So late one afternoon, a client calls up asking for a horse vet because one of the horses had cut its leg. Now, my boss did most of the fancy like mare scanning and stuff like that. So I suppose like he was the most horsey out of all of us, but he wasn't in, and I think it was just me and two brand new grads at the clinic, which clearly, as Marcus has said, do not know anything, let alone about horses. I suppose so at the time they said, you know, oh yes, Esther's a horse vet, which I kind of was. I was a jack of all trades. And so off I went. And it turns out the stitch up was pretty simple. Getting to the farm was a little bit more difficult, and I actually went on a bit of an accidental detour because I missed the turn off, and that, you know, these like long, continuous, monotonous farm roads, which all look the same. I didn't realize for a while. So the time I got to the farm, I was a bit later than expected, and so it wasn't a great first impression for this horse vet, but never mind. So I'm there stitching up the sedated horse and trying to make small talk with the older owners and build some rapport and, you know, client relationship building and that kind of thing. And all of a sudden, she looked at my hat that I had on and was like, oh, have you been to Timberlands? And I'll just backtrack a bit. So Timberlands is like a North Island Pony Club eventing championship that I competed my horse in a few years before that. And we all got hats that said Timberlands, and I just love that hat. I pretty much wore it every day to most calls. But basically that day, it screamed horse rider, which then interpreted to horse vet for that owner. And from that second on, we're like besties. And we talked about horses and cross-country jumping. And I even got myself invited to go hunting with them one day.
Oh, no. Explain hunting.
So hunting is basically when a whole bunch of farmers or whoever arrive with their horses on a farm. And I guess it comes from like the English countryside, right? And then they go and they chase like a hare or a rabbit, and all the dogs go, and at the end of the day, they just kill They just kill one rabbit. Come on, guys. It's just one rabbit. So, and they jump over fences and things.
Are you telling me they get like 30, 40, 50 horses and all these people and they go and they get one rabbit?
It's the thrill of the chase.
Oh, wow.
So all was good. And I left and they were really thankful and I got into my car, my truck, and they drove off. Now, halfway back to the clinic, my truck started to jolt a bit and then like bunny hop. And then I managed to pull over to the kind of like the next farm driveway just before it conked out. So do you know what I'd done? I'd actually run out of petrol or diesel. Sorry, I'd run out of fuel.
Uh-oh.
I'd basically driven that truck dry.
Oh no.
And before you judge, there was actually a really good explanation as to why I'd done that. So again, back up a little bit. At this practice, we had like radio walkie-talkie things to communicate with the clinic. Like we'd be like, 70 to base, finish at Farmer Joe's, coming back to the clinic, you know. And I wasn't used to radios because at my previous clinic, we'd actually just used our cell phones to touch base. So I didn't know that we had to turn the radio off at the end of the day, and especially at the end of the week, otherwise it drained the car battery. So it only took a few rounds of like jump-starting my flat battery on a Monday morning for someone to realize that, hey, don't you actually ever turn off your radio? So after that, I very cleverly wrote a note to myself that said, turn off radio in like big capital letters, and I put it on, is it like the dashboard, you know, like in front of the speedometer. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, I never had a flat battery again. But what I'd inadvertently done was actually cover the fuel gauge of my truck.
Oh no.
So God knows how long I was chugging around with like the red light on empty until that evening when the poor truck finally gave up. So once I realized this, I quickly phoned back to base, and the nurses, who were no kidding, they were just about to leave for the day. They're like just walking out, and like mine was the last phone call, and they're like, oh, I suppose you better answer it. And it was like me. And luckily they picked it up and they came to rescue me. They didn't bring any fuel or anything. They just brought some like high vis vests. And so there were like three little girls trying to push my truck in neutral to a safe spot. And then we like hung the high vis vest on it. And I jumped into the nurse's car and I got rescued back to base. Shame.
Oh, shame.
and you know the best bit? So while I'm stuck on the side of the road waiting for help, my new besties, my new horse clients, drive past this horse vet on their way to Twilight Golf. Because that's what I saw horse clients do. They play Twilight Golf in the afternoons. And they wound down the window and they asked me, like, are you okay? And I was like, yep. All good. And they would have clearly seen my truck draped in floral yellow on the side of the road on the way home and clearly realized that it wasn't okay. And remember, I was so pissed off with this because remember, I'd done a detour by accident on the way there. So if I hadn't missed that turn off and like driven God knows how long down the wrong road, I actually probably would have made it back to base.
That was a costly misturn.
I know, right?
Man. Oh, well, what a lasting image to leave our listeners with. Esther stupidly stuck on the side of the road and misdiagnosing cats. Maybe I'll leave them with one positive story about let's call him happy-go-lucky the lamb.
Sounds great.
So I had this lamb come in. By the way, if you're enjoying these tales, I've actually written a book called I'll Be Home Before the Snow. It's a memoir and it's got lots of my veterinary stories in it, and it'll be getting published, I would say, in the next few months, so keep an eye out for that, and we'll post a link on our social media when that comes out. So there you go. So Lucky the lamb, was this tiny little lamb this lady brought in that she found in a storm. Actually, her son found it, but anyway, in the night, like on this paddock and her neighbors, it was dying, so they brought it into their house, warmed it up, rescued it, and pretty much it kept coming in with all these joint infections and diarrhea and thing after thing, and it wasn't responding to antibiotics. I mean, it cleared up a little bit and then it came back. And then what happened was I actually had to put it on this really long course of antibiotics. And because it had been limping so much, it got its tendons got contracted and it couldn't fully extend its leg. So then the owner was thinking like, oh man, he's going to say we need to put it down. But I could see the owner really loved it and it was like a pet to her. So I was like, I'll just treat it like it's someone's pet dog and carry on. And so I made a splint for the leg. I had to do a bunch of different splints and keep changing them. And then when we finally thought we'd got it right, it got another joint infection and a really bad one. And so basically the owner was thinking like, this is it. But I said to her, I was like, okay, we can take out the big guns now if you want. And I can knock it out. I can do x-rays. I can do a joint tap. I can infuse the joint with, I can flush it with saline and infuse it with antibiotics. What you can do is you can actually put a tourniquet into a regional perfusion of antibiotics by putting it in the vein and leaving it for like 10 or 15 minutes with just the tourniquet on for the antibiotics to perfuse through the area that you're trying to target. So to my surprise, she agreed to doing all of that. And I did all of those things, and surprise, surprise, it actually cleared the whole joint up and it got better. And then we were like, we've done it. But do you know what? Its leg was so weak because it had been not using it that it couldn't even put its own weight on that leg anymore. No. The leg would just give way when it tried to walk, because by now it was like a half-grown sheep.
Wow.
This is like months of therapy. And that was when I was really like, I have no idea what to do. And then one of my colleagues was like, do you know, with dogs, sometimes we do like hydrotherapy. Why not the sheep? And I was like, why not the sheep? I'll call them. I was like, give me their number. And I called this dog swimming place. It's called Doggy Swim Spa. And they were like, yeah, we'll take a sheep. So I went with this lady and her sheep to this dog swim place. And we did swimming with this sheep for like weeks and weeks until it could walk again. And we got this most expensive sheep in the universe back to health. And like the lady was so stoked. She bought me a wee mug with a picture of the sheep on it for Christmas. And yeah, it was awesome. Yeah. And if you want to see Lucky the Lamb, he's actually on YouTube. If you go to Lord of the Vets, my channel, and you check out Lucky the Lamb. I think I titled it Miracle Sheep, but Lucky the Lamb, you can watch his story there. So it's quite a cute story.
Oh wow. Oh, credit to you and credit to that owner for for persisting far out.
The happiest sheep in the world.
Wow. I hope he lived a really long life. Like, I hope he didn't get like hit by something on the way home, or you know.
Oh my goodness, you're such like a doomsdayer. He's fine. He's living a happy life in a paddock somewhere.
And he lives forever on YouTube anyway.
Yep. And he's got like 10 sheep girlfriends and he's just living the dream. All right.
Oh, yeah. Look at you creating dream lives.
For sheep.
That's right. Oh, we thoroughly hope that you've enjoyed all we've had to share across this series.
Yeah, we hope this has inspired you to keep learning and being better at what you do and what you love every day. Your vets will thank you, and your clients and patients will thank you too. And Esther and I thank you.
That's right. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.